Of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. And in this episode, we'll continue to dig more into the July issue of Our State magazine, which is all about summer fun. With the first article up is called Campfire Delights. Once more, around the state, nostalgic treats with a modern flair kindle memories of camp. So these are five different places where you can get s'mores. Amante Tacos and Spirits, this Latin American-inspired restaurant in Greenville helps diners recreate the sweet experience of huddling around a fire to toast gooey marshmallows. Those who wish to make s'mores can order a kit that includes skewers and the staple three ingredients along with a personal fire pit. You can check them out at amantetacos.com. Chocolate and S'more. The Chocolate and S'more food truck roams the North Carolina coast and beyond, crafting eclectic renditions of the classic dessert with homemade graham crackers. Whether it's the popular Nutella and strawberry combo or a seasonal special like blueberry cheesecake, each treat is toasted to perfection. The truck also serves a newly launched collection of signature s'mores flavored ice cream. As for four-legged family members, the bacon-flavored Fletcher and the peanut butter-flavored Biltmore, dog-friendly s'mores named for the owner's two golden doodles, are also on the menu. Based in southeastern North Carolina, check the website for their locations. They're on Facebook at facebook.com/chocolateandsmore. Howling Cow. For decades, North Carolina State University's Dairy Education Center and Creamery, known as Howling Cow since 2008, has built a loyal following with more than a dozen homemade ice cream flavors. One famous flavor, the graham cracker-based 4-H Campfire Delight, is made with chocolate chunks and marshmallow swirl. In the mood for something decadent? Order the Wolfpack Split, which includes three signature flavors, 4-H Campfire Delights, Chocolate Peanut Butter Spin, and Chancellor's Wolf Tracks. The split is topped with warm marshmallow fluff, graham crackers, hot peanut butter sauce, and whipped cream. Located at 100 Dairy Lane in Raleigh, 27603, they have a website, howlingcow.ncsu.edu. And the last of our Campfire Delights to try is Crave Dessert Bar. At Crave, a swanky bar with locations in Uptown Charlotte and Downtown Asheville, dessert is elevated to the next level. Crave's menus are organized like a book. Chapter 1 comprises savory plates. Chapter 2 offers sweet options like the s'mores platter, a spread of Hershey's milk chocolate, graham crackers, and marshmallows served with a personal fire pit for the table. Chapter 3 is devoted to cocktails like the S'moreoffen, a sippable dessert of caramel vodka, creme de cacao white, creme de cacao dark, and marshmallow syrup. Cheers! And they're located on West 5th Street in Charlotte or North Lexington Avenue in Asheville. And you can look up if you're in the area, look up their website is cravedessertbar.com. That's crave, like C-R-A-V-E, dessertbar.com. Our next article is entitled Bathing Beauties. Motivated by her love of history and early childhood memories of Wrightsville Beach, a former Wilmington teacher became a vintage swimsuit collector. And on this opening page, we have a vintage postcard says greetings from Carolina Beach, and then we've got a postcard at the top, in for fun with two ladies in the shallow water with the two-piece bathing suit that looks sort of like a peppermint with red and white stripes on that. Fabric rationing during World War II inspired two-piece bathing suits like the, there's one here, the yellow top, there's a yellow one that, like a halter top. And then there's a green set. These are kind of high-waisted, boy-cut bathing suits, but still two-piece. One piece, like 1950s aqua suit, became fashionable later. So this one has, it's like a one-piece suit, looks like it's cotton. These are not stretchy fabrics, most of them. And it has some rickrack trim around the top of it, along with a beach ball and some shades and a straw hat on that picture. Elaine Henson stands in the upstairs closet of her Tudor Revival home in Wilmington and contemplates the garment bags lined up before her. She's dressed in workout capris and tennis shoes and sports coral lipstick. She unzips the bags one at a time to reveal her collection of bathing suits, some of which date back to the 1880s. "Look at the straps on this one," she says with a chuckle, pulling out a 1920s wool-knit navy one-piece with side cutouts. "People are always so surprised when I tell them that men would wear these things, but they certainly did because at that time a man couldn't be in a bathing area without something covering his top." Henson points to the gold initials, S-A-M, stamped across the chest, a bathhouse label that meant this garment was once a rental. A history lover, Henson explains that around the beginning of the 20th century, folks would travel across America on trains just to experience the therapeutic properties of the coast's salty waters. Back then, every beach had a bathhouse, where visitors changed into rented bathing suits, went out for a swim, returned for a shower, and then changed back into their street clothes. "I just love seeing people's reaction when I tell them that everyone rented their bathing suits back then," Henson said. "They get pretty grossed out." A retired second-grade teacher and a Wilmington native, Henson's vintage bathing suit collection was inspired by a previous fascination of old postcards. In 2003, she and her husband, Skip, purchased a 1940s cottage in Carolina Beach that Henson quickly set out to decorate with classic postcards of local beaches. She would scour eBay for the postcards and eventually amassed more than 2,000 of the 3x5s, which then prompted her to look through the old advertisements of bathing beauties. Intrigued by the retro magazine ads, she decided to purchase a bathing suit to hang as artwork in her cottage. Henson's earliest memories of bathing suits stretch back to her family vacations at Wrightsville Beach. She fondly recalls her parents having to wrangle her and her siblings out of the ocean, coaxing them over with cups of lemonade and banana sandwiches wrapped in wax paper. By high school, Henson realized that a perfect day at the beach started with the perfect swimsuit. She added new suits to her wardrobe every spring, oftentimes purchasing the ones she liked in multiple colors. A bathing beauty in her own right, Henson kept her beloved suits for decades, amassing dozens over the years. Her favorite is her timeless polka dot bikini, a black strapless two-piece with multicolored spots that she wore to both a beach event in the 1980s and on her honeymoon cruise with Skip in 1992. Henson began her collection by purchasing a 1930s yellow jacquard child's one piece on eBay, which she had framed and hung. She then set out to find an early 1900s swim dress and soon connected with a local family in possession of a navy worsted wool swim dress and a cotton bodice with matching navy wool bloomers. "I made them an offer and they turned me down," Henson said. "I knew I had to have it, so I called them back and offered them twice as much, which they took. That's still the most I've ever paid for a suit, but it doesn't matter because it's one of my favorites." Henson found her next suit, a navy wool one-piece with button-on skirt, midi collar, and wool stockings, at an antique store in Wilmington. But as she got ready to frame some of her newest acquisitions, she realized she had a problem. While the child's suit was a perfect size for framing, the adult ones were much too large to work as wall art. "But by then I was bitten by the bug, so I just kept buying them," she says. When it came to bathing suits, Henson says that fabric is everything. She researched how the industry evolved over the years. She learned that suits of the late 1800s were made from natural materials like cotton, wool, linen, and silk. The introduction of rayon in the 1930s, the first synthetic fabric, referred to as artificial silk due to its smooth texture and cheap cost, eventually changed the landscape of swimwear. In the 1930s, Lastex revolutionized the industry with its ability to dry faster and hold its shape. The invention of the two-piece and later the bikini happened as a result of World War II, when the government rationed fabrics for uniforms. The way the bathing suit manufacturers coped with that is they just bared the middle, Henson said. As Henson's knowledge grew, so did her collection. She purposefully searched for suits that represented as many decades as possible from the 1880s to the 1980s. Some showstoppers in her collection include a 1930s ribbed wool knit brief with a button key pocket and cotton belt with a 1940s hunter silk green taffeta one piece that's fashioned with a zippered skirt over cotton knit bloomers. Henson says that her collection stands nearly complete at 27 suits, with at least one from every decade, and she contributes her knowledge to her community. Henson serves on the Centennial Committee for the Cape Fear Garden Club, St. Andrews-on-the-Sound Episcopal Church, and the town of Carolina Beach, and dedicates her time to sharing local history through presentations and slideshows. To me, these suits don't just represent something you wear to the beach or to the pool, she says. Each of them, with their own unique characteristics, is a little microcosm of a period in history, a little slice of what life was like in the time they were worn. Henson plans to one day donate her postcard and swimsuit collections to UNC Wilmington, her alma mater. For now, she's just happy to relax at her beach house when she can, and makes sure to pack enough one-pieces so she can wear a different suit each day. While the thrill of the coast hasn't changed since her childhood, these days Henson adds a wide-brimmed straw hat to her outfit whenever possible. A bathing beauty always wants to avoid a sunburn. And I'll flip back and give you a little insight into the pictures in this. Decorating her beach cottage with the old postcards gave Elaine Henson the idea to start collecting vintage bathing suits. And there we have the framed 1930 Childs One Piece, which was the first one in her collection. She has that in one of the bedrooms. And actually, it's a gold, sort of a golden color, goldenrod color. And there's a dresser in that room. It looks like the bed and the dresser are also sort of in the yellow family. And she's got a yellow table with some yellow towels stacked on there, I guess in a guest room. Then we have a picture here. As Henson says, when it comes to swimsuits, it's all about fabric. Polyester used in each of these one pieces has always been popular for its resistance to chlorine and an ability to reflect UV light. And so she's got like a red and white checked swimsuit with buttons down the front. And then a blue one that I talked about a little bit earlier, a blue one piece, kind of with a boy leg, a short skirt, very, very short, straight skirt. And then we've got a red and white striped bodice with a little peplum skirt. And the bottom part, the brief is a solid red. And there's a little button interest at the very top of that swimsuit. On this last page, we've got turn of the century, it was common for swimsuits to be made with wool and silk. Henson's collection includes a navy wool dress, wool knit briefs, and a hunter green silk taffeta suit. And the green silk taffeta suit looks like it could be a cocktail dress, halter top, and then the one that's the navy wool dress, it looks like a schoolgirl outfit. It's got a button around the middle, a button up front. Looks like a sailor suit that for a child. And then the briefs probably for a man. The navy wool knit briefs with a, looks like a belt, a white belt, and a little tiny pocket on there, the zip front. Interesting. And then this last page, she's got some retro postcards. Bathing beauties wore full glam to the beach. A head full of coiffed curls and red lipstick were the perfect accessories. And she's got, looks like a group of young people with a thermos of beverage and a picnic and towels walking together down the beach to have a picnic. And then I see a group of girls with a soldier walking arm in arm down the boardwalk. And I see a Brit's Donut sign and Benway's gifts. And there's a movie theater. So it's obviously a vintage of Carolina Beach boardwalk there. The next article is called Happy as Clams. A pair of ocracokers find peace and contentment while digging for treasure in Pamlico Sound. Their ingredients for a perfect summer day? Sunshine, crystal clear water, and a mess of clams. Since closing their beloved Cafe Atlantic restaurant in 2013, Bob and Ruth Toth have devoted much of their summers to digging for clams in Pamlico Sound. And we've got a picture here. They're standing in thigh-deep water with a pulling along a floating basket, and each of them have their clam rakes, and they both got headgear on with their keeping and clothing to keep them from getting too sunburned. And on the facing page, we have a clam knife that says it's from the Coeur Sound Waterfowl Museum and Heritage Center. And we've got a mess of clams there that are closed, and then they've got a couple of clams that have been shucked open. As the sun retreats from its summit, inching down toward the horizon line, separating the dark blue water around Ocracoke from the Carolina blue sky, Ruth Toth lowers a bright orange fishing basket and well-worn aluminum clam rake into the boat. From under the brim of her sun hat, she glances back at her cedar-shingled home overlooking Pamlico Sound and Teach's Hole Channel. She checks her watch. The tide is dropping. She climbs aboard, and her husband of 48 years, Bob, eases his Jones Brothers flat-bottom skiff away from the dock and sets out past Springer's Point toward Portsmouth Island. It's a calm day, just right for clamming, the kind of day where, from afar, the water takes on a deep turquoise color and up close is as clear as crystal, its surface reflecting the occasional puffy cloud against a canvas of white sand. As the boat skims across the shallow sound, the steeple of Portsmouth Methodist Church grows closer and Bob eases off the throttle. The shoals are in sight. Bob's pretty good at putting us on them. He really is, Ruth says in her pleasant, measured way. With their spot claimed, a simple pleasure of summer commences, one that Ruth has cherished for the past 63 years. Ruth Toth spent summers on Ocracoke with her grandparents before moving to the island full-time in 1978. As a child, she learned from her grandfather how to fish, crab, and dig for clams. And there we have a picture of her out in thigh-deep water, and she's going at it with her clam rake. And she's got her basket by her side, strapped to her waist. Ruth comes by her love of clamming honestly. Raised between tobacco fields in Martin County, she began spending summers with her grandparents on Ocracoke the year she turned 7. Those summers would chart a course for the rest of her life. When I was 8 years old, I announced one night at the supper table, "When I grow up, I'm going to live at the beach," she says with a chuckle. Everybody laughed at me. To me, the beach meant Ocracoke, because that's the only beach I'd ever been to. Those hot months spent at her grandparents' 1960-era's Soundside Cottage were like storybook. Sun up to sundown, Ruth whiled away her days running along the dock, fishing in the sound and playing in the water. Every May, Ruth's mother would buy her a new swimsuit, and by July she'd have to wear shorts over it because she had worn the bottom out, Bob says, laughing. A faded photograph shows Ruth's grandfather sitting in the stern of a skiff, cigar hanging out of one side of his mouth. Ruth looks down at the image. "Tagging along with my grandfather is how I started clamming," she said. "I played in the water mostly, but I learned a little bit, too." She put those early lessons to use when she moved to the island full-time in 1978. And we have a couple of pictures here. It says, "All you need to try your hand at clamming is a keen eye to spot clams tucked away in eelgrass, a rake to dredge the sandy bottom of the sound, and a basket to collect your findings. Bob tosses an anchor off the bow, and the slow current swings the stern around. He cuts the outboard motor, and the hum is replaced with the call of gulls. Ruth sits on the gunwale and slips off the fiberglass edge into the water, clam rake in hand. "You can clam any time, but low tide is preferable," she said. Wading in deep, knee-deep water, she ties a rope loosely around her waist and attaches one end to the fish basket rigged with a pool noodle around the top edge. She makes her way from the boat, her bobbing basket trailing behind her. She begins to slide the metal rake along the bottom of the sound. As the sand is startled, the water turns milky in the rake's path. The occasional skate glides past and out of sight. Blue crabs dart and dodge Ruth's shuffling feet. As she approaches a grass bed, digging a few inches deep into the sound, a tine of the rake makes a distinctive thunk. Ruth stops, satisfaction spreading across her face. She pulls back on the clam rake and raises it to the surface. There in the rake's basket is a perfect chowder clam. She plucks it from the rake and tosses it into the basket. The clam lands with a splash. "Got one!" Her cheerful announcement breaks the contented silence that has settled over the sound and travels across the placid water to Bob, digging 20 yards away. He smiles in return. "I've never out-clammed her," he says. They like grass beds. "You'll usually find some about a foot or so right off the edge," Ruth says, continuing to rake. The eelgrass gently ebbs back and forth in the water as she meanders around the perimeter. The dance continues. Rake, rake, thunk. She's occasionally fooled by a stray oyster shell and sometimes rewarded with two or three clams at a time. Each thud delivers an equal thrill. Toss by toss, clams eclipse the bottom of the basket. For Ruth, who grew up as one of six children, food has always been at the center of family life. "That's how we celebrate. That's how we console. That's how we have fun," she says. But for 25 years, food was more than just a family tradition. It was the foundation of her professional life as well. In 1989, Ruth, who'd taught for 14 years at Ocracoke School, and Bob, a seasoned dredge boat captain, found themselves opening the doors of what would become one of Ocracoke's most beloved restaurants, Cafe Atlantic. The origin story is foggy. When asked how they came to open a restaurant, Bob says, "We took leave of our senses one evening." Ruth counters, "We disagree with this story." He has his version, and I have my version, and I swear my version is true, but he'll swear it's not. Opening a restaurant was his idea. Regardless of how Cafe Atlantic started, Ruth traded the classroom and Bob the dredge boat for the kitchen, she working the day shift and he the line at night. Local seafood anchored the menu, and of course clams were a major draw. But one dish in particular commanded a devoted following. Clams Casino had never been served on this island, that I know of anyway, before we opened. Ruth says it was an instant hit, especially with the locals. It was simple. Garlic butter, a little breadcrumb or cracker crumb, Swiss cheese, and bacon. No pimentos, no pepper, no onions. Admiration for the dish extended beyond locals and repeat visitors. In 2013, Bob and Ruth's nephew, Eason, decided to propose to his girlfriend. He made a reservation on the second floor of the restaurant at a table window with a sweeping view of the island. "Eason wanted the Clams Casino," Bob says. "He gave me the diamond ring to put in the dish. I was a nervous wreck." Bob placed the ring in an empty clamshell in the middle of the plate and sent it out to the dining room. He waited. The sound of cheering guests floated into the kitchen. She said yes. In 2013, after almost 2.5 decades, the time had come yet again for the Toths to begin a new chapter, retirement. But Cafe Atlantic would persist in more than just the memories of its loyal customers. In 2006, Ruth released Cafe Atlantic Cookbook, a compilation of some of the restaurant's most prized recipes. After the book sold out, she released a second edition in 2015, adding new recipes from the last 7 years that the restaurant was open. That, too, has sold out. Talks of a third printing are underway. When clamming, there's joy in the pursuit and reward in the discovery. at the bottom of the basket turns, as the bottom of the basket turns from mesh into a gray of massive gray striated shells, tomorrow's dinner takes place. Clamming was and is just one of the activities of summer. It's a recreation that we enjoy and can share with others. It's like a party to us, Ruth says. You don't really have to think about clamming. It's a physical thing. All ages can do it. The little kids can come, the old folks. My mother was still clamming in her 90s. The toss clam regularly when family and friends are on the island, and they take out former customers who return to Ocracoke every summer. When notable chefs visit the island for the Fig Festival, a trip to the shoals with Bob and Ruth is often part of their itinerary. With the daily harvest limit nearly reached, the toss put down their rakes and stow their baskets on a shoal. When they return home, they'll grade the clams into three sizes. They'll leave them in buckets of sound water along the shoreline where the clams will purge sand overnight. But for now, it's time to soak. After a hot, sweaty day clamming, it's nice to take a soak. To just sit and relax, Ruth says. The older I get, the more soaking and less clamming I do. On the way home, the sun slumps lower, casting a soft gold light across the rippling water. A gentle breeze blows out of the southeast. Bob and Ruth wave to a group of sun-kissed kids playing along the shore under the live oaks of Springer's Point. As they approach their dock, the Swan Quarter ferry rounds the edge of the creek, its foghorn calling out before heading west to the mainland. Eason's two boys, ages 5 and 3, run barefoot and shirtless down the dock to greet their grandparents and uncle. Their great aunt and uncle. Eason Jr. peers into the basket and plucks out a clam as large as his hand. Ruth pats him on the back, looking on proudly. A love of clams starts early in this house. A peaceful day, the caption here for some of the photos, a peaceful day spent on Pamlico Sound has its own kind of reward. Still, the best is yet to come. The fuller the clam basket, the more bountiful the feast. And we have the clams spilling out from the basket. All you need. Let's see. So there is a recipe here, Clams Casino, and it's actually quite simple. A recipe for Cafe Atlantic's iconic appetizer appears in Ruth Toth's Cafe Atlantic cookbook. With this note, this very popular appetizer was developed by 10 Fields of Cat Ridge Deli fame using our delicious Ocracoke clams. We serve 6 clams for the appetizer at Cafe Atlantic. It involves medium-sized clams, cracker meal, garlic butter, sliced Swiss cheese, cooked slices of bacon. You shuck the clams and loosen the meat from the bottom shell. Leave the clam open face on its bottom shell. Sprinkle with the cracker meal, then garlic butter, slice of Swiss cheese cut to the size of the clam, and a quarter slice of cooked bacon. You put the clams in the shallow pan in a preheated 450-degree oven for approximately 8 minutes, or until the clams are bubbly and hot. For the garlic butter, mix together 2 tablespoons of finely minced garlic and 1/2 cup of softened butter, and then and bake it for 450 degrees for about 8 minutes, and it looks pretty tasty. Well, on that note, we'll need to finish today's episode. We've run out of time for today's episode, and I hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. For any questions or comments, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long until next time.